Yamuna Teravanachare. Yamuna Teravanachare. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihare. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihare. Gopijana Vallabham Girivaradhari. Gopijana Vallabham Girivaradhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana.
What's the verse?
Yuna Tera Vanachari.
Well, which one? 24. He told me 25.
Yamuna Teravanachari.
I don't know.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopijana Vallabha Girivaradhari. Gopijana Vallabha Girivaradhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yamuna Teravanachari. Yamuna Teravanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
He doesn't know which verse.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thank you. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Vishnu Pada Paramahamsa Parivraja Kacharya Shrutara Shimat Hes Bhaktivedanta Swami Shila Prabhupada Ki Namacharya Shila Haridas Thakur Ki Shimat Bhagavatam Ki Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bhakti. Hey, Radhika, can I Prabhu? So which one? 25th. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So this morning we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter 22, entitled Prithu. Wait, what is this? Whoops. Chapter 25th, entitled Characteristics of King Puranjana, text 25. Tam, aha, lalitam, vira, savridida, smita, shobanam, snigde, napanga, punkena, sprishta, premod brahmad, Bruva Tam aha lalitam viram Tam aha lalitam viram Savrida smita shobhanam Savrida smita shobhanam Snigde napanga punkenam Snigde napanga punkenam Sprishta premo brahmad bruham Sprishta premo brahmad bruham Tamaha lalitam viram Savrida smita shobanam Snigde napap Snigde pan na panga punkena sprishta premo brahmad bruvam tamaha lalitam viram savrida smita shobanam Snigdena Panga Punkena Sprishta Premo Brahmat Bruva
unto her aha addressed lalitam very gently vira the hero sabrida with shyness smita smiling shobanam very beautiful snigdena by sex desire, apanga punkena, apanga, by the arrow of glancing, sprishta, thus pierced, prema ud brahmat, exciting love, bruha, by the eyebrows. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Puranjana, the hero, became attracted by the eyebrows and smiling face of the very beautiful girl and was immediately pierced by the arrows of her lusty desires. When she smiled shyly, she looked very beautiful to Puranjana, who, although a hero, could not refrain from addressing her. Purport. Every living entity is hero in two ways. He is a victim of illusory energy. He works as a great hero in the material world, as a leader, politician, businessman, industrialist, etc. And his heroic activities contribute to the material advancement of civilization. One can also become a hero by being master of the senses, ego swami. Material activities are false heroic activities, whereas restraining the senses from material engagement is great heroism. However, great hero, one may be in material world, he can be immediately conquered by the lumps of flesh and blood known as the breasts of woman. In the history of material activities, there are many examples, like the Roman hero Antony, who became captivated by the beauty of Cleopatra. Similarly, a great hero in India named Bajirao became a victim of a woman during the time of Maharashtrian politics, and he was defeated. From history, we understand that formerly politicians used to employ beautiful girls who were trained as Vishakanya. These girls had poison injected into their bodies from the beginning of their lives so that in the course of time they would become so immune to the poison and so poisonous themselves that simply by kissing a person they could kill him. These poisonous girls were engaged to see an enemy and kill him with a kiss. Thus, there are many instances in human history of heroes who have been curbed simply by woman. Being part and partial of Krishna, the living entity is certainly a great hero, but due to his own weakness, he becomes attracted to the material features. Krishna Bahirmukha Hai Bhagavan Chahare Kare Nikatasta Mayatare Japatiyadare. It is said in the Prema Vivarta that when a living entity wants to enjoy material nature, he is immediately victimized by the material energy. A living entity is not forced to come into the material world. He makes his own choice, being attracted by beautiful woman. Every living entity has the freedom to be attracted by material nature or to stand as a hero and resist that attraction. It is simply a question of the living entities being attracted or not being attracted. There is no question of this being forced to come into the contact with material energy. One who can help himself steady and resist the attraction of the material nature is certainly a hero and deserves to be called a Goswami. Unless one is master of the senses, he cannot become a Goswami. The living entity can take one of two positions in this world. He may become a servant of his senses, or he may become master of them. By becoming a servant of the senses, one becomes a great material hero, and by becoming master of the senses, he becomes a Goswami, or spiritual hero.
Tamahalalitam vira sabrida smitta shobanam stingdena panga punkena sprishta premo brahmat bruvam.
Puranjana, the hero, became attracted by the eyebrows and smiling face of the very beautiful girl and was immediately pierced by the arrows of her lusty desires. When she smiled shyly, she looked very beautiful to Puranjana, who, although a hero, could not refrain from addressing her.
Omagyanati mirandasya gnanjana shalakya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtha Bhutala Shemade Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityanamini Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Prichadne Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschati Deshitarini. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram Ram Ram, Ram Hare Hare.
So we see how attraction towards the opposite sex is very strong and inherent in each and every one in this material world. It is something that is unavoidable, that just come as a package with this material body. It's just something like a kind of a manual that comes along with the product. If the product, of course, is sometimes you get some products without a manual, but of course that's not a legal, basically, in many ways. Or better example would be a bill, maybe. But something that's actually essential, that is something inherent, that it's actually designed to be present there. So body, by its nature, it is designed in such a way that actually it should be utilized for procreation and therefore continuation of the that particular species. So when something is designed for the particular purpose, therefore it's understood that it has to be utilized for that particular purpose. And any different kind of utility that goes against basically that particular principle, it's considered to not to be really not to be along the line with that particular creation of that particular element, thing, or when in this connection we speak about the material body that goes along with it. So material body is a design basically to get attracted, especially to become a prey to any other attraction, basically, any other body that is, of course, due to the attraction here in this material world. So then going, as we could say, against the grain, going against the attraction or going against the principle of that particular association or principle of procreation would be something that many people in this material world call unnatural. And many times people would be those who are on the path of renunciation and those who are trying to practice separation of the sexes, basically, they would be considered very weird. They would be considered very, very different, unnatural. And many people have a lot of resistance towards such kind of idea. Even in the West, there are many examples. There are hardly very few processes, so to say, that emphasize the importance of restraint of the senses or a celibacy. There are very few, and they're also under very strong attack of the general masses who are definitely addicted to the sense enjoyment. And they can't find any utility, any means, and any benefits, basically, in restraintment of the senses. So in the West, that is also something that is very difficult, even for those very few who are supposed to practice celibacy. And they experience great difficulties and finding it kind of more comfortable to just reject it and basically not to follow and therefore rather abandon principles of celibacy and chastity also, even to the larger degree. And just because of the influence of the masses, the influence of the medias. There was one devotee was invited in the West, there was in America, there was a particular seminary where basically the celibate monks of the Catholic order reside, and he was invited to speak about the benefits of the celibate life. And they express great difficulties, and they wonder also how the devotees manage to control such kind of tests, or how the devotees manage to basically restrain, they would say, in their language, that word was used, restrain, or basically anyway, to fight back those kind of influences. I can't find a better word now, I'm just letting off the mind. So the idea is basically that they thought it's something like you have to control, it's very something that it's unnatural, it's oppressed, but there wasn't idea of sublimation, there wasn't idea of any direction, basically, directing something that already exists into something positive. Because in general people, and we will see in so many different spiritual processes that people just find it far more easier, and of course that's the general tendency somehow or other to practice spiritual life in a family environment. But of course, because there are no higher principles presented, especially in the Western world, then even such kind of family life basically becomes material life. There's no difference then. It's not spiritualized. And it's not really that particular type of attraction towards the opposite sex actually becomes just mundane and material. But in the name of the religion, somehow or other, it has been, and it is propagated. And people find very easy to enter such kind of a religious organization and think that they're really actually practicing the spiritual life. But of course we know, as long as we think that we are this material body, and as long as we think that we have something with to do with the present day family, then actually that cannot be called a spiritual life. It's something that is very material, because it's based on the material bodily, it's on the material bodily platform. It has nothing to do with the spirit soul. So actually, yes, this attraction, it's very natural, and people find it very difficult to go against it. But the whole point is, natural is it in the sense that, yes, there is that propensity, but as we understand, here in this material world, it has been perverted. The prema, or the real love, actually, the only love that we have, and that is meant for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is transformed into the kama, or the lust, that living entity experience towards some other living entity, which is actually unnatural, which is not really meant for it. Of course, as I said, in these bodies, and these bodies have been designed for that particular purpose, and anybody going against that particular principle, then it's considered, that is considered to be then again very weird. But the whole point is that people don't basically understand that that particular principle it's meant to be utilized, but in a different way. It has to be transformed from the lusty thoughts towards the loving feelings towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So body by itself, yes, it is designed, and Lord Brahma, with that particular purpose of offering the chance to other living entities, had designed this particular world so that other living entities become attracted to each other and therefore give the chance to jivas who have different kinds of material desires to fulfill them in different kinds of bodies. And whoever didn't, of course, Brahma became very upset when some of his sons refused to obey his order. But of course, having the higher thoughts and higher realizations already, he consisted in, of course, not initially willingly, but the basic point was that the whole material world, the whole purpose was created in such a way that to enable living entities somehow or other to get particular chance to fulfill their material desires. And of course, ultimately, human form, while understanding that it's not just meant for sense enjoyment, which is actually futile after all and brings everybody to the miserable state and miserable condition, that it's meant for some higher purposes. So here also Puranjana we see, because Narada Muni of course has to give some kind of an analogy, not directly addressing the King Parchina Barhishit, he points out to somebody else and tells the story of King Puranjana, and explaining the point how actually living entity is very vulnerable in this way, who doesn't have a strong spiritual basis, who doesn't have a higher understanding of the spiritual life, that definitely he's going to become attracted to other living entity. We as a marginal energy, we have that propensity, living entity has the propensity of being attracted either towards internal spiritual energy of the Lord or either towards the external energy of the Lord. And it gets attracted by the variety. It's a natural. When we come here to this material world, we see there is a lot of variety. And this energy, it's material energy, it's a different from the spiritual energy. And therefore, living entity finds something else, something different, something, you know, new that he tries to exploit, that he tries to somehow relate to. But somehow or other, that material variety is dead, because material energy is dead by itself. So what is really attractive, actually, it's the living entity itself. So when the other living entities get entrapped in this material world, being covered by all the gross and subtle elements, and make them animate, then this is something that actually it's very attractive. Inanimate object, for how long they can be attractive? For how long somebody can relate to, say, this pillar? These pillars are nicely made. They're very nicely carved. They're beautiful. But how long you can relate to that particular pillar? Of course, unless Nisimhadev comes out. And it's a different story. It's a living entity present in the pillar. Then maybe it makes some more sense. But like now, you can appreciate beauty, but not for very long. But the problem is due to that contemplation of appreciation of a particular object that is made and fashioned in a particular way. Krishna describes this in Bhagavad Gita very nicely. Jayatan vishayam pusa sangasteshu pajayate sangat sanjayate kama kamat krodo abhijayate krodat bhavati samoha samoha smriti vimbramaha priti bramshat buddhinashat buddhinashat pranashati. That actually while contemplating the object of the senses, the person becomes attached to them. And from that attachment, the lust develops. And from the lust, the anger arises. And then from the anger, of course, knowledge is covered, intelligence becomes covered as well, and the person basically falls down. He loses the real sense of existence. So this is how living entity, when it comes to the material world, it gets attracted. It gets attracted to inanimate objects, which are beautiful. Yes, because still they are energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But especially when the living entity enters these inanimate objects and becomes movable, becomes animated, then the attraction multifoldly increases. And in this way, the living entity thinking, hey, this is actually something that I can relate to, that it's actually the real object of my relationship, he gets entrapped, he gets bewildered. So therefore, here in this material world, we see, basically, there are living entities. But we falsely think that we are actually attracted to these gross material coverings that are covering really the substance of the jiva, of the living entity itself. So that's the false illusory concept. We don't understand that actually the real attraction of the living entity is towards another living entity which is there, entrapped in that particular, say, body, when we discuss here in this particular example. So it is not really that body is attractive, but it is the spirit soul. When a person dies, everything is there, all the material elements. But is that attraction still there? That we had it some couple of moments ago? It may be, but not to the degree. And further the time passes, the attraction will definitely fade more and more. As soon as we realize, hey, actually the person is gone. So the attraction towards body. So what is that makes the body very attractive? It's the spirit soul. This is the real beauty actually. Because spirit soul is the life force that actually we can relate to. So as long as we can't relate to any other living entity, that actually, of course, attraction is very, very minimal. And it's not so entangling again. Because soon we realize, hey, we can't relate to any particular thing. What is entangling is that thought that we can enjoy that particular object. That is the worst thing. And this is something that also Arjuna asked Krishna, how is it, of course, also, when we speak about entanglement of this in this material world and being attracted to those kind of material elements and the matter itself, Arjuna said also, how is it that we become confused and we act against, you know, we know that we are not supposed to act in a particular way, but still we act against Dharma, act against religious principle, we act against our own principles. How is it? What is that driving force? And then Krishna explains, Kama esha krodha esha rajaguna samudbhava mahashana mahapapma iti enam iha vairinam. It's the lust only, Arjuna. This is the driving force of the living entity. That lust which has been, as I mentioned, the lust which arises from the contact of the material senses with the material objects, this is the how Krishna said, it's the worst enemy actually here that we are facing in this material world. So it's the worst thing that actually we have to deal with. But it becomes very easy when we understand, when we have knowledge, that these lusty feelings are just again transformation due to our own misidentification with this material body. When we start identifying in the spirit soul, and we understand that that propensity is actually real loving propensity towards Krishna, then it becomes far easier, at least having some aim in life, at least having some goal to pursue, rather than that one of the lusty engagements. So it's unavoidable, it's very difficult for anybody in this world who doesn't have some higher understanding to pursue such kind of a renunciation. It's almost impossible. And Srila Prabhupada said, even for those who are basically entrapped in the family life, that it's going to be very difficult because there is so much time and energy distracted from the original process, basically, that goes on into such kind of a relationship. So it's very difficult to really pursue the spiritual advancement in such a way. Because we, as long as we think, hey, there is some kind of object of enjoyment, and that actually this is something that's going to fulfill our propensity, and it's not related really to the Supreme Personality of Godhead at all, to that degree again, then we'll have to remain entrapped here in this material world. So Puranjana, King Puranjana here definitely is a victim, like every one of us, in whichever body we are. Everybody is a victim, and every kind of different kind of body, as long as I said we didn't develop that sufficient attraction through the service to Krishna, will still come and will remain influenced by that kind of a driving force. So very essentially what Srila Prabhupada here mentions is to understand that people are trying to act to be heroes in the material world. Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport, they're working so hard They want to be recognized by different ways here in this material world, just in order to attract the opposite sex. The real heroism actually is to become master of the senses, as Srila Prabhupada says. There are two options. We have only these two options. It is easy to conquer practically the whole world. It's far easier than to conquer our own lust, anger, all the anarthas, greed, envy. It's far easier. And it's not so easy to, again, to deal with such kind of contaminations that we have acquired while coming here in this material world. And we find there are so many examples in the world of the personalities who are acting under that driving principle. And like Arjuna said, what is it? Like that lust. People know that they're not supposed to act in a particular way, but still they're performing activities. Like there is a story, it's a history actually, not just a story, of Chandra. When Chandra once passing, traveling through the heavenly realm, he saw Tara, which was the wife of Brihaspati, and he became very attracted to her. Similarly, like here, Puranjana. But Tara was, of course, married at that point. She was married to Brihaspati, who was the great sage, who is the priest, who is the guru of Indra and the demigods. And but somehow or other, Chandra couldn't control his own senses, and he approached Tara, although she was married already. And he proposed to her. He said, "Why you are attached to your husband, who is just an old sage? He's not really an attractive personality, and he's just engaged in meditation and worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What kind of benefit are you going to derive from such kind of a husband? Why don't you accept me, who I'm so vigorous, who I'm so beautiful and young?" And he mentions so many qualities, he glorifies himself. But Tara refused. She understood, she was a very chaste lady. And then Chandra kidnapped her. There was no any other mean, but he kidnapped her, and against her will, he had a relationship with her. And out of that, as Puranas explained, the Buddha was born, who is the presiding deity of the planet Mercury. And because of that particular act, all the demigods were aghast. And Chandra understood that actually he can't relate now to anybody on that particular position. So he ran away to the demoniac planet and took shelter of Shukra. Because Shukracharya is an enemy of Brihaspati. They don't have a good relationship. Brihaspati and Shukra, they have always some kind of strength, because basically Brihaspati is the guru of the demigods and Shukra is the guru of the demons. And they always fight. And they always, therefore Brihaspati and Shukra always advise their followers how to act against each other. So it's interesting that although Chandra was a demigod, but because being unable to control this demonic propensity, actually, we can call, and the last is actually, when uncontrolled, definitely a demonic propensity, he took shelter of the Shukracharya and the demons in the lower planetary systems. So we see how actually in ourselves also we have that demonic propensity. Everybody's having it to larger or the lesser degree. And at any point it can surface out. So if you are not able to control the senses, so another example, how essential actually it's to direct that particular propensity in the service of Lord Krishna. Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. By devotional service, it's so easy. I mean, it's not easy, but it's easier, far easier. Becomes easier if we become steady and fixed and determined. And we see really that particular attractive object as something that really we don't have to do anything with for our own sense gratification. They're meant for Krishna. Everybody is meant for Krishna, actually. Everybody is meant to serve Krishna. Nobody is meant for our own service and our own sense gratification. But still, so interestingly, demigods at that point demanded Chandra to return Tara. And he didn't agree. And then the final solution was somehow or other to bring up the whole army of the demigods, and they were ready to come and conquer the demons and to fight. And thinking how actually in some way this should be this should try to be avoided, because so many lives again will be lost just for the sake of that particular incident. So then Brihaspati, who was a white sage, still advised Indra to go to Shukracharya and try to plead with him to somehow or other give back Chandra, to surrender Chandra back to the demigods. And when Shukracharya had been praised by Indra, then he somehow confessed. He said, yes, actually Chandra didn't act in a proper way. And he ordered Chandra that he can't take shelter anymore here in this... Interestingly, Shukracharya also, he acts according to the dharmic principle, although he's supporting the demoniac forces or the demons, he still knows what are the religious principles, and he follows the Vedic knowledge. Of course, mostly demonic propensities, that they do this for their own sense gratification than rather than to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Shukracharya still ordered Chandra to go back to his own abode and return Tara to Brihaspati. And Brihaspati, of course, welcomed Tara back and Chandra was back, but I don't know, forgot, now there was something attached still to Chandra for that kind of action that he performed. But the point is here that he also, although being a demigod, he manifested that particular propensity due to the influence of the material energy. As I said, anybody can become a prey of it. So to guard against, it's really something that we have to maintain by focusing ourselves on the ultimate goal and through the devotional service, by engaging the senses in the service of Lord Krishna, not trying to let the mind wander and being covered by that particular illusory propensity, lusty propensity that everybody has, which comes along, as I said initially, with this material body. It just can't be avoided. It is there. And yes, people say it's unnatural to fight against that particular propensity. It is unnatural to fight, but we are not fighting. We are not, we are managing it. That's something that people don't understand in this material world. The propensity is there, but it's misdirected. It's misdirected towards the false goal of trying to become happy by enjoying the senses. So again, it has to be directed towards the propensity, loving propensity, to serve Krishna and satisfy actually Krishna. By satisfying Krishna, that's the only way we ourselves can get satisfaction. So this is something that people are not aware. And therefore, whoever, Srila Prabhupada gives so many examples here, whoever have become a material hero, thinking that they are great conquerors, they never actually become satisfied and happy in their life, because actually they become the slaves of their own senses. So Srila Prabhupada is advising us here in this particular purport that we should become a Goswami, a master of the senses. And we have to know, as Krishna is explaining in Bhagavad Gita, where this enemy resides, the lust, enemy of the lust. It resides within the senses, within the mind, within the intelligence. We know what are its strategical positions. So when you fight, when the army, two armies fight, what is the very important thing? It's not so much how big and strong army you have, but how good strategic, say, general you are. Where do you place your forces the best? And where do you know how to fight that particular enemy? If you don't know how to, if you're not strategically very strong, if you just come out on the field and you think just by the, say, even if you have the larger army than some of the opposite party, it just doesn't matter, it won't work. Strategies are very important. You have to find the weak point of your enemy. And just by finding any particular weak point of the enemy, the conquer is far more easier. We know it's such a simple example. Even Kauravas, they had far larger army than the Pandavas. But of course, Krishna was on the Pandava side and he was the greatest general, greatest experienced military personality. Anyway, it's just an example. So the point is, we have to understand what is this lusty feeling, which can, like in this case of the King Puranjana, which can really misdirect us from the real goal of human life. We have to know where is it, how is it placed, how it acts. And this is something that people in general, they don't have any information about. So while knowing this, if we then practice what has been given in order to transform this life lust into the loving feelings towards Krishna, then the spiritual life becomes far more easier. And there won't be any such kind of obstacles on the spiritual progress. Of course, everybody is prone to it to the degree that actually we are practicing the sadhana, which is a very strong basis for being immune to such kind of attacks. Because as long, Srila Prabhupada said, as long as we have this material body, that kind of propensity is going to be there. He gave the story of the old man dying and a particular minister anyway bringing the king with his daughter, and the particular dying person was still attracted, and the only thing that he was gazing upon wasn't the king but the daughter itself. So that propensity remains till the end of the life. It is there, as long as the body is there. But the whole point is that if you understand how to channel that particular force, and yes, inherent propensity which has been transformed, if you know how to transform it again, if you utilize that particular process, then the things become far more easier. Anyway, so I'll stop here. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, please.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
If the propensity of lust is there till the end of life,
till
the end of one's life.
Yes.
Till the end of one's life. How do we go back to Godhead?
By transforming that. If you don't transform it, that it's going to be there.
But who
by
will
transforming
transform
that propensity.
That means Krishna alone will be able to transform us. Am I correct?
Krishna alone will be able to what?
That means we have to wait for the mercy of Krishna till such time he removes our desire and takes back to Godhead. Am I correct?
Well, ultimately going back to Godhead is the mercy of Krishna. But from our side, we have to work up to the level we can work it up. Out, you know, there is both endeavor and mercy, you know, the Damodar Lila. You have to endeavor. So as long as the body is there, to maybe some degree, yes, propensity might be there, but definitely it will be far greatly minimized if it is transformed in that loving propensity towards Krishna. And that's the final test of our spiritual advancement, how attached we are towards the Krishna and His devotional service, and how detached we are from anything that is material.
So we need not lose hopes of going back to Godhead.
No, Srila Prabhupada said, just by remaining in ISKCON and following this particular process, automatically we'll go back home, back to God. But remaining, that's the struggle many times. That's the whole point. It's a struggle. It's not easy to remain. I just received so many informations, what's going on, for example, in the West. Here in India, it's far easier in that regard. In the West, Maya is very, very, very strong for everybody. It's very difficult. It's a hard struggle. It's a hard struggle even to remain in ISKCON. And to keep on practicing four regulative principles and just to keep on chanting.
Thank you, Prabhu. Hare Krishna, by the way, I mean, who got the custody of Buddha in the Chandra Tara episode? Who got the custody of Buddha?
I think, as far as I remember, Brihaspati.
Huh?
Brihaspati.
Brihaspati.
Yeah.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, thank you. At a certain stage in our lives, at a particular time, we are fascinated or unstoppably attracted by a particular person, by this factor. But at the same time, when someone says you don't chase this person, there are these other persons you can marry or chase. But then, though everyone, from their point of view, feel this would be a better whatever, we find that we are unstoppably fascinated or attracted by this one person only. So can it still be the lust factor? What is the factor that makes us hooked?
Well, it is. That we become blinded. He's asking, Nanda Prabhu is asking, what is it that makes one person especially attracted towards some other person rather than somebody else, right? Although they might be attracted. That feeling, that lusty feeling actually, that is aroused by whatever propensities that other particular person has. And it's interesting how we understand, even what Krishna says, it covers our knowledge. It just blinds the particular personality and he doesn't see. That's that illusion. It's the covering. So you become fascinated by that one particular person. But it is not that you can't become fascinated by somebody else in the next moment. It is there. Depends how covered you are with that particular potency of that particular personality, other personality. Okay, thank you very much, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.